everybody to the user council meeting for November 6th. If we could call roll, that would be perfect.
Okay, starting with those on Teams, we have John Rockwell, Tammy Gozu-Paco, Aaron Kawara, Henry Cole, Master Sergeant Joe Rodriguez, John Crona, Lieutenant Ben Henders, and John Clendenwood, Bobby Carter, Carl Edwards, Donald Lane, and Kevin Farrell. And that's it for on Teams. And then present in the room, we have Bruce Recker, David Reed, Mark Newman, Nick Stanisov, Paul Fussy, Scott Formo, Tim Woodall, and myself. Did I miss anybody?
Jim Goodman.
Oh, sorry.
Is that possible?
And we also have in the room Special Try and Jones and Evan Rothwell. And who else has something?
Yeah. Individual from Motorola, could you repeat your name, please?
Zach Haas.
Oh, Zach.
That completes the roll, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. We can hear you, Jim. Can you hear us?
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if she heard me or not.
Yes. Thank you very much, Jim.
Okay.
All right. Do we have any introductions of new guests or new members at this time? We can move on to the first agenda item, which is the review and the approval of the September meeting minutes. At this time, I would entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes for the last meeting, October 2nd.
Kyle Green here, motion to approve.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Kyle. And then I didn't hear who the second one was. Was that you, Ben? Mary, did you get who motioned and second?
Motion. There were two motions, but I only heard Kyle. I didn't hear who the second person was that spoke. Was it Jim?
My apologies, ma'am. That might have been me, Bob Carter.
Yep, that's the voice.
Thank you both. Hopefully everybody had a chance to review the meeting minutes from the past meeting. Are there any updates, any questions or comments at this time? Hearing none, motion approved. Thank you very much. Moving on to the next agenda item, which is the review of the issues and risk log. I don't believe we have any updates to the active issues or risk log, nor do we have any updates to the action items at this time. The next agenda item is the operations management overview. And at this time, I turn it over to Mr. Paul Fussy. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. So kind of a long presentation today, so if you bear with me. So for training, been very busy. I would like to extend a thank you to Kyle Green for setting up the venues and conducting the training flyers. So Dan Nelson and I held four training sessions up in Fairbanks and North Pole on October 15th and 16th, and there was approximately 60 people attended the training from fire, police, EMS, city, and borough personnel. The recorded session is now on the LMR website in the training section, and that was due large part to Mr. Green, so thank you on that one again. On November 9th, I've been asked by the Civil Air Patrol to give a ANLMARC training presentation at their wing conference to their cadets and other personnel. So this Saturday I'll be doing that, very similar to what we did up in Fairbanks. Also, Dan and I have been talking to Juneau DOT office about a possible ANLMARC training session via Teams. So been working with Patrick Thornton here at APSDS and then Pat Dreyer at the DOT office, similar to the Fairbanks one, but also DOT specific, how they can use the ANLMARC system more and how they incorporate into like their dozers and their dump trucks as they're doing road maintenance down in Southeast. So we'll be working on that one, and that'll be hopefully soon. Start looking at outreach. As everyone knows, we've been looking at and forward-leaning on the bidirectional amplifiers. So MTUG, the Motorola Trunk Users Group, they're creating a BDA subcommittee. So anybody who signs up for the Motorola Trunk User Group emails, there was a meeting coming out, and they put in a Teams login for that one. But that first meeting, and this will be November 12th. And that is the national MTUG, not just the Alaska chapter. That is the national MTUG. So I'll be logging into that one and learning on, see what they're going to talk about and what kind of requirements they're going to have on there. But if anybody who gets the MTUG emails, make sure to go through there and sign up to attend those meetings. Also, there will be a BDA uplink testing webinar on November 14th. And that was put on through the APCO. So there's a lot of interest in the BDAs and DAS systems on there. So anybody wants to take a look at those, let me know, and I can send you the links for those. And then also the monthly APCO chapter meeting, that'll be November 14th at 2 p.m. So start looking at the document reviews for October. There was only two, system upgrade, cleaning, sanitation, and talk group development. I jumped ahead just because that was really quick on that one. System upgrade will be a little bit longer. So we're still waiting on the remaining batteries for the Zone 1 master site for the UPS backup. Site A is complete. However, we're still waiting on 8 more batteries, so 72 out of the 80 batteries arrived for Site B. But with that, we do have Site A up and running for a backup on that one. And then Nick's team and I, along with Scott's personnel, we've been attending the biweekly meetings with Motorola as we go through and finishing up the upgrades on there. For Nick's team, the PMIs, they had 3 for September, 5 for October, and they're right on schedule where they're at when you start looking at the 6-month separation of doing their PMIs on that one. Also, we just completed the Windows Moto patch. So when you start looking at that and you'll get emails out, please reboot your consoles. The newest security patch update, our ISSM just gave you the upgraded list. Do you have anything to add to that, Mr. Reed?
I do not.
All right, thank you, sir. But everyone, as you get through those emails, make sure to upgrade that so we can stay compliant with our security patches. Any questions on that before I go to the metrics?
Paul, this is Henry Cole with DOT. I'd like to, we can talk about this in more detail offline, but I'd like to chat with you about expanding the kind of DOT-specific training you were talking about to all three of our regions, including Northern Region and Central Region and Fairbanks and Anchorage as well?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Cole. Yeah, I'm taking notes right here, so I'll contact you offline if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So everyone, if we take a look here, one thing I do want to start out with, there was a huge weather event up in Fairbanks, and the Esther Dome site for 16 hours was without power. So Genesis didn't generate any data for that. So when we start looking at some of the numbers on here, you'll see it later on written down. So what had happened was that power went down, and with that huge snowstorm and slush, the road was impassable. So the generator would start up and then shut down from overheating because the louvers wouldn't open up. But we'll take a look at the numbers on this one here, and you're going to see that the numbers are higher this month. And we did have a weather event here in Anchorage that Nick and I were monitoring quite a bit. And when we came in the morning, we usually come in between 6:30 and 7 in the morning, the total number of calls and push-to-talks were almost double than it usually is when we come in due to that huge weather event we had here in Anchorage. But as we go through the numbers here, the reason I'm prefacing this, you're going to see the very small amount of busies through there. So the system handled both weather systems phenomenally. So we start looking at monthly group individual calls. We're at 1,540,711. Our push-to-talks, you can see, have gone up quite a bit on that one, 2,457,206. And like I said earlier, with our busies, even with that large amount coming up through, so I'll just back up so everyone can take a look, we shot up precipitously from the prior month or even the year before with the numbers of push-to-talks, and our numbers of busies have dropped. So we had 133 busies out of over 2,400,000 push-to-talks. So as you can see, a lot of zeros down there. Our subscriber count, 32,433. Now our system sites below 3.9, there were 9 of them, one down from the year before, 4 up from last time. But as we go through, and what I mentioned before about the Esther Dome on there with the winter storm, they did go offline. And when it went offline due to the winter storm, some of the following sites on the Parks Highway had to reroute around the Richardson Highway. Through the robust state SAT system, it started going through the other route instead of directly through the Esther Dome. So because of the limited bandwidth, they started bouncing. Intermittently, but through the traffic reroute. So we start looking at Clear, Garner, Money Knob, Nanana, Reindeer Hills, and Gannor. And then 3 of them because of PMIs. That was Clear, Fire Station 12, and New Connect. Does anybody have any questions on the metrics before I continue? Hearing none, Nick and I and Mr. Newman from the AWARN system, we've been pretty busy last week and this week doing ATP, and I just want to thank the AWARN team for assisting Nick and I on the ATPs and the Motorola N50 portables. They passed the ATP testing this morning. We just finished that up, and they radio has now been put on the ALMR website, and it is TDMA capable, but that has not been approved for the system. So I just want to thank the AWARN team for that, specifically Mr. Newman. So on October 30th, I was advised by our Motorola technician, Mr. Rose, for JBear that the contract for the R1 North battery replacement has been finalized and awarded to a contractor, and optimistically that work will be completed sometime before the end of 2024. The annual security inspection for Zone 1 master site was completed on 5 November. No discrepancies were observed. And just in closing, just want to wish a pretty happy birthday to Marine Corps folks. Veterans Day is on the 11th. And then a happy Thanksgiving to everyone on the 28th. That completes my report, Mr. Chair, pending any questions.
Thank you very much, Paul. Any questions for Mr. Fussy at this time? Paul, I just want to mention how much I appreciate all that you do for us. Moving on to the next agenda item, which is the System Management Office. So I turn it over to Mr. Fenestock. Nick?
Thank you, John. I've got a couple things, and I'm sure you're excited to hear that. I'll talk for more than 5 seconds. So to add on a little bit to the Esther Dome, it's not necessarily per se that the data was lost. It's more of when the site went down, the normal route bounced the other direction. In that second or two that it took to reroute, the singular notice that came from the site never made it to the Genesis system. And so the Genesis, because it didn't know when it actually went down, it wasn't able to calculate its downtime based on when it came back up. So that singular message that it didn't receive is ultimately the discrepancy of it. All the other data that I've checked, the subscriber data, the site data, you know, to include other sites did make it. It was just those singular ones that did not, so it couldn't calculate. The other thing was I'm going to bring up some issue. Well, this is a repeated issue, interference. There was some interference recently at Defied between myself and Evan Rockwell, who made some calls over to some folks over in that area. They, in turn, made some radio calls to some vessels out there, a ship vessel. Interference magically stopped, but this is definitely a reoccurring thing. If you happen to know harbor masters or whatever the technical term for these folks are, gently remind them to tell their folks to turn their radios off when they're coming into port. And then the last thing I want to add is this past month, I've been getting an increased number of calls of users having issues with their radios. After assisting them with said issues, ultimately what came about is that these radios have duplicate IDs of other radios. So if you are a programmer or know other programmers, let them know to, you know, double check that the ID that radio is assigned to is in fact the correct one and not another one. That can cause a lot of issues, bonks that will be interpreted as busies, but they're not really busies, or just straight up missed audio. So just wanted to relay that onto everyone.
Hey, Nick, on the ships coming into port, is that down in the 138 to 144 or up in the 154 to
150? Yes, it's in the roughly 140 to 143 range is typically the areas. It's around the Valdez area divide. Seward, we have issues. Homer, we have issues. And they're very...
Are these forum ships?
I can't say for certain which one is which. I know I've heard there's a Norwegian ship that comes through that has an issue.
They had Norwegian cruise line, so their cruise for everybody listening, this is Paul Fussy. So their cruise ships that are coming in, Homer and Seward, they're interfering. Over in Valdez, they're actually the oil tankers coming in. So if you go on the vessel monitoring or AIF website, you can see these oil tankers coming in, and they're different flag, but those are oil tankers coming into Valdez that have been in there. So.
Yeah, because 138 to 144 is not authorized for them to operate on.
Absolutely. And then they're not just coming in just barely. They're coming in really strong, like severe degradation.
Okay. And the cruise line in Jewel is interfering with the microwave because it's SATCOM is just exactly the direction it's pointing us, right in line with our microwave shot. So.
Every year, around the same time frames, around the same times of the day, the same thing.
But the ships in the other places shouldn't be using those.
No, they're not authorized to use those frequencies.
They might be authorized further out, but
they're
not in.
They're out in international waters. It's not a problem, but they're allocated in the United States as TAC and training for the DOD, Department of Defense, the 138 and 144 band. Is specifically designated for Department of Defense TAC and training. We got it modified to, in Alaska under our spectrum sharing agreement to get the 154 to 15665 public safety spectrum. So in Alaska, it's not typically used for TAC and training. So the military has given that up. In Alaska, But we would have to notify the FCC is what we'll have to do. NTIA doesn't have any enforcement ability, so it would have to be the FCC. And because we have, it is federal spectrum under the federal allocation tables. It's not public safety spectrum, but because it's being used for public safety in the spectrum sharing agreement that we have, we should be able to get FCC to enforce that. Probably have to get a hold of the folks in Los Angeles and inform them of, do we have any call signs or anything that we could get with regard to those?
We typically just make a couple phone calls to either dispatches or the, what's that term?
Captain of the port.
Yeah.
Harbor Master.
Harbor Master, thank you. And next thing we know, it stops.
Goes away.
Yeah, so we're not really sure who.
So do we know if they're talking to the Harbor Master on those frequencies?
If they're talking, they're talking for a real long time. There's been a couple instances where on the dot 8 o'clock comes in and it stays keyed up for, you know, almost all day.
Is it possible that this is like marine radar or another system instead of voice radio?
No, I think it's voice. We hear voice. I mean,
I can't hear it. No, the system will pick it up as the interference, but because it's not P25, it won't actually listen to it. Without being out in that area and listening to ourselves, yeah, I'm not sure if it's voice, if it's data, if it's radar.
I don't see how it could be radar, quite frankly.
It wouldn't be constant. It would be
it would be some kind of pulse.
Yeah.
So everyone, this is Paul. I reached out to some of my folks in the fishing industry and got a bunch of information on the radar to see if that was the issue. I sent it over to Nick and his team there. So it's on a different frequency than ours. So it's not a radar coming off of the ship.
I'll check the international tables to see what it might be allocated in other countries. And it could be they're authorized to use it, but don't realize it when they're in national U.S. waters or when they're in U.S. territorial waters that they're not authorized to use it. So we might have to send a letter to the Harbor Masters to put out, perhaps, and then that might be the first step we take with a warning.
Yes.
That we would get FCC involved, which could lead to fines.
I'd rather not people get in trouble more, just a,
right.
Hey, warning.
Maybe so we could draft up a letter, Paul, that you could send out, and I can help you do it. We'll address the spectrum that they're operating in and how it's federally allocated. And if it's internationally allocated, we'll identify that too. If they're totally operating out of inappropriately operating in international waters as well as U.S. territorial waters, then that's a problem.
Thank you also. Yep. Kyle has a question. Kyle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, respectfully, is that am I hearing that there might be a action that the user council needs to take with a motion to take an action, such as sending that letter out? Or is this something that's going to be handled more locally by the agencies that it specifically impacts?
I don't know from the governance perspective if the user council needs to make a motion, but I think as a general function of the operations management office, it would be something that they would do, regardless of whether the user council said it as a motion, but that would be a normal action of the operations management office.
Okay, thank you. It just had some similarities to the motion we made to put other agencies on notice, but that was more with telecom backhaul stuff. So thanks.
Yep. Thank you very much,
through the chair, Mr. Green, this is Paul. One of the things we actually had contracts with GCI and stuff, and it was affecting our system, where this one is an outside agency, and we're going to just talk to the captains of the port and the harbor master. So that's why I see the difference on that one there, Mr. Green.
Okay, thank you.
Also, Chief, you have your hand up.
Yeah, we also have in the newsletter that goes out, we still have a mention of interference issues on Birch Hill and that had been sent to appropriate authorities. Do we have an update on that?
Yeah, with regard to Birch Hill, we've been unable to identify the source. That is a Spanish-speaking, I think, emission coming from we don't know where. We've had equipment up there where we've tried to DF the signal, but to no avail.
We have a pretty good idea, but it's not definitive.
Yeah,
the direction finding is a very wide kind of range, I guess you could say. It's somewhere between, you know, the left of you into the right of you forward kind of range.
And so we're not sure if it's a result of the sunspot numbers, and we have some kind of ionospheric conditions that are carrying the signal and then dropping it in the same area, although it continues to happen. So that kind of rules that out. I mean, we were going through a heavy ionospheric conditions in the 11-year cycle, which would pick up a signal from a foreign country and pass it through the ionosphere and then drop it at various locations. But this is continually and in the same, being picked up on the same site. And it is spectrum in the 138 to 144 band again. We've confirmed that it is not related to military radios, DOD military radios operating in that spectrum. So, and again, the people talking on the radios have a Spanish dialect. Don't know exactly what they're saying because they don't speak Spanish. But very hard to locate that one. That is another one. We did submit a what we call a JSIR, a Joint Interference Spectrum Report, to the national level. We will update that report and request that they ask for FCC assistance. And, that's all we can do. There's no, and if it's not a federal source that is that is creating the interference, the federal government agencies don't really have a standing to enforce compliance. The FCC has to do that. They have the legal authority to enforce compliance. Whereas under the NTI, National Telecommunications Information Administration, under the Department of Commerce, they don't have that that authority. So
to add into what Tim's also saying, you know, those of you that don't know, once reports are submitted, I mean, it's not just a matter of, oh, submitted, now they have to turn it off. No, there's a whole show and paperwork and investigation, and even though you had, you know, 10 teams, we'll say, of 10 people or more, whatever, do all this data gathering, they have to create their own team and their own data gathering. And it is not a fast nor pleasant experience.
Unless you can locate them and you know exactly where they're at, and then it's much easier, much faster process. But in this case, we don't know where the signal's originating, so it's difficult at best to enforce turning it down if you don't know where it originates.
And direction finding too is, even with a very highly sensitive directional antenna is still pretty broad. Many years back, there was an interference signal at Arwen North. I thought I had it isolated down to trees. I was about, I don't know, a quarter of a mile off, I'd say, from the actual location of it. But yeah, it's and that was you using a pretty good direction of finding, you know, equipment.
We found it in a building on the second floor in a small room.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We have another question out there for Mr. Carter.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, I was just going to throw it out there that has any consideration been given to look at satellite radio? If I heard you correctly, you were talking about voices that sounded to be Hispanic in nature. I'm wondering if maybe you're not picking up something from satellite radio.
Typically, a satellite downlink would be so far removed from a VHF 138 to 144 band that it would seem improbable from a physics, pure physics perspective.
Typically, satellite radios can, I mean, they'll range, but they can be anywhere from the UHF range up into, you know, 2, 3, 4 gigahertz. So depending on your link type. But, yeah, the definitely outside of range of VHF.
Gotcha. And maybe I'm like looking at the wrong band. I was just kind of Googling things out of curiosity and see that satellite radios are broadcasting, you know, 138 to 100 or 136 to 138 megahertz. And if I got it right, that's kind of in that's a VHF frequency range, in the VHF frequency range. But I don't know. I'm kind of just Googling this, so it's hard to say.
You're right. Those do exist, but they're far and few between. I mean, those are probably older radio types. You know, transmitting at that frequency to a satellite in space is going to require ample amount of power, and it's not the best use of a radio in that case. You want to aim for the higher frequencies.
The other option that we're considering, if it continues, we were hoping that it would dissipate, but if it continues, is that we would re-engineer a new frequency pair for that site. Hopefully that we would be, that it would eliminate it, but if not,
yeah, it's a possibility.
Very good. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
And thank you very much. Anything else, Nick?
No, that is all I got.
Are there any questions for Mr. Fanstock? Hearing none, we can move on to the State of Alaska Department of Defense overviews. We'll start with Mr. Scott Stormo. Scott, turn it over to you.
Thank you. Not much today, just project-wise, what we're really down to on the state's project with Motorola is doing is installing Juniper routers on the console side. We've just got to do some link testing with Motorola, and then they will schedule somebody to come put the routers in. And then we'll be pretty close to done on our side. The DoD side still has Juniper routers to go in at their sites. And microwave to be completed. The state has installed 2 of the 4 7705s for the DoD, and the other 2 sites have the state's ones that we have loaned to them in the past that we will be swapping out with the new 7705s the DoD has. Not sure why Motorola hasn't got probably an upgrade to finish that. I told them that it's a lot funner to do that when it's summertime than it is when it's wintertime, but it can be done in the wintertime, and we expect them to still come up here and finish that work. So in theory, they will still be doing tower work here in the next few months if they can get somebody up here.
Do you have any update on the tower ownership transfer? Is that working? Is that progressing?
I'd say it's progressing. It just hasn't been done yet. The like Fort Greeley guys, 59th signal, depending on who's going to sign in for, just wants their commander to have a conversation with somebody and understand what that means. So what it means is you're responsible for whatever's there, and I can't really tell you much about it because it's not ours. So I'm not sure we're going to be able to help them. But, you know, just to point out what kind of threw that back on the plate this week is Greeley Dispatch called AT&T to say their tower light was out on the tower, and AT&T said, well, we need to talk to the state, that's the state's tower, because they probably knew how to look up in the ASR registration.
Sure.
So we got a call about that. Thanks for calling. That reminds us that we don't have that paperwork signed yet because that's not our tower. So, you know, of course, that drives, well, what are we going to do if we own this? What are we responsible for? Fixing that tower light.
Fixing the tower light. Among those, yes. So
it's an interesting conversation.
Well,
it'll eventually get
I mean, if they want to say it's your tower and you take it away, they're going to have to buy a new tower and put it there.
And they don't. They know it's not our tower. And I said, somebody is, you know, there's cell companies up there. Somebody's collecting revenue from it. Whoever's collecting revenue, I would say thanks, they own the tower. So if you can find out who has an agreement, that will probably help determine who should be responsible for the tower. But, other than that, we're swapping out a bunch of Ethernet cards on the state 7705. It's just part of a life cycle refresh. Old versions of cards going out of support. Need new versions of cards put in to continue to update software. So, other than that, I think that pretty much covers what we've got going on the state side.
Thank you very much, Scott. Is there any questions? Tim, you're up. DOD.
On the upgrade perspective, Motorola finally got out to JBear and started working on both the TAN and the TAS, doing the system upgrades that both TAN and TAS are now TDMA capable. They still have some equipment on the dispatch side that has to come in, so we expect them to come back and finish that. We did find out that we have some issues with the antennas on the portable tower, so we're going to have to get some maintenance done on those antennas. Just for general information, doesn't have anything to do with ALMR, maybe, I hope not. Anyways, but Verizon, we cleared them to put 6 sites on JBear. So we just finished the coordination. So they will have 6 operational sites for cell services, which is good, but adds more towers.
Are they putting up their own towers?
Yes.
Or are they using some?
Yes.
Make sure that their towers are taller than Parma North Tower. We don't, nothing has to happen to that tower. Like, it's not working.
Yeah, they're not using R1 North, so.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Just make sure their tower's taller.
Oh, taller. I don't know that I can do that, but we did find some RADHAS issues that we identified that they have to take care of, but other than that, there's no issues. But and then on the other, from the governance perspective, we needed to have in place or some kind of a financial agreement, policy or agreement with the state of Alaska, because DOD is a third party recipient of services of a state of Alaska contract. Congress in 2013 passed a law that that allows federal government to receive services or enjoin with state and local government to share services. But in order to do that, under 10 U.S.C. 2679, you have to have an intergovernmental support agreement. So we were trying to write our own agreement for a period of time that would cover this, but law, when we sent it through the legal office, they said, no, you can't write that. This has to be done. And only the service secretaries are authorized to enact these intergovernmental service agreements. So we're having to go through a lot of bureaucracy to get it done. But we are working it, and we will have a interagency service agreement. What it'll do for third party, what I mean by third party is you're receiving services from a contract, but you aren't signatory to the contract. So in essence, you have no authority on the contract. And in that third party relationship with the contract administrator, the contract administrator is responsible for paying for the services because legally they executed the contract, and they trust that in your third party relationship with them that you will pay for the services you receive from their contract in a timely manner. In addition to codifying that relationship and providing a legal basis for which an intergovernmental service agreement is recognized as a contractual commitment, which means that the signatories to that would be obligated from a fiduciary responsibility standpoint to comply with invoice payment and also funds accountability and a lot of other things. But anyways, as part of the governance, we're working it at the installations. Your garrison commanders and at the wings for the Air Force, the wing commanders will be getting some documentation from the Secretary of the Air Force, Secretary of the Army level to concur. We will make sure that we send out a lot of documentation and educate them ahead of time so that this moves smoothly through the process. That's all I got, unless there's questions.
Thank you very much, Tim. Any questions for Mr. Woodall? Hearing none, we can move to the User Council Representative updates, and we can start with DOT. Any updates from DOT?
Oh, this is Henry with DOT. I've got nothing to add at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. How about DPS? Lieutenant?
No, nothing to add at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And all others. Moving to the DOD component, any Army installations, J-Bear or Eielson?
This is Sergeant Rodriguez from Eielson. About a month ago, we did receive about $2 million worth of fallout money. And with that, we were able to start working away at our TDMA upgrades, and just got word today that we have 230 APX 6500s that should be in late this week, early next week. So looking forward to getting those in. And we have also hired a new civilian who should be starting beginning of next month for our LMR position here.
Most excellent. Good news. Anything else?
Hi, this is Misty Hart from Elmendorf. I'm in for Sergeant Draves. I do have to report that our first batch of flash codes came in for our TDMA upgrade. We got 1,260 of them, so we should be starting on that in the next couple of weeks.
Perfect. Appreciate the update. All right, we can move to the federal non-DOD components. Anything from DOJ, DOI, or all others?
And nothing for the good of the order from TSA, except to make a comment that Mr. Smith has in the chat that he is online and has a comment.
Oh, thank you very much.
Appreciate that. I didn't want to talk out of order. I just want to acknowledge the concerns for the Fort Greeley tower not being accepted. We are working with our higher command. There is definitely a misunderstanding of who is responsible for owning that tower within the Army, what department or section is responsible. We are working with higher. I will re-engage with my team to make sure that we're doing what we can to move that process forward. And also, we're continuing our recruitment actions to get an ALMR individual on board, but that's an overhire, and we're still pending approval by our higher command. So hopefully we'll have that in place soon, and we can do a recruitment action and get a permanent civilian that can be more involved in this team. But I just wanted to put that off for visibility.
Wonderful. That is good news. Thank you very much, sir. We can move to the municipal component. Anything from Central, which would be Tammy or Jim?
This is Tammy, and I don't have anything for the good of the order. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. How about you, Jim? Moving to North, we could have either Chief Berrien or Kyle Green.
Well, good afternoon, Kyle Green here. Thank you again to Paul and Mr. Dan Nelson for coming to Fairbanks with that training. Yeah, great turnout, lots of good conversation. We did do an after-action survey, got 22 responses out of those 60 attendees. If you are looking to plan a local training yourself and want to look at the feedback from that, I'm happy to share. Just send me a message to my email. I'll put that in the chat if you don't have it. And no, class went great. The instructors were awesome. Paul and Dan did a fantastic job. So super appreciative, lots of good feedback and good continuing discussions here locally. So thanks.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. How about Southeast? Would it be Aaron or Chief Dryden?
This is Erin, and I don't have anything new to report for the whole region. However, I did hear from someone in Haines after our last meeting, and they said the replacement of the antenna on High Mountain made a noticeable difference in their radio coverage, so they appreciate that. And that in Juneau, we did receive a public bond initiative passed. We have some funding, and we expect to increase our use of ALMR by leveraging that funding, hopefully over the next couple of years.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant. Always appreciate the updates. All right, we are on to new business. We could begin with the annual chair and vice chair election ballot process. Would that be you or Mary, Paul? Paul, or Mary? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Paul. I'd be remiss if I did not point out, I believe we skipped all others under DOD.
The non-DODs.
Oh, so apologetic. We can move back to those bullets. Any updates from DOD non-others? And the other one we missed, Paul?
Mr. Chair, that was the only section of the federal non-DOD.
On federal non-DOD, thank you. If no updates, we can move to new business. And I turn that over to you, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So So there's two things. I'll give a little brief on the ballots, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Richter, who'd like to give a presentation. So with the annual chair and vice chair election, the ballot process, after the user council meeting today, Mary will email all primary and alternate members their ballots for chair and vice chair. Everyone will have 2 weeks to return their ballots. That way, it'll give Mary time to get everything processed for the December meeting. So look for those ballots coming out.
Mary? I forgot to include that. If you have to get together with your, you know, the primary and alternate, get together and vote.
That's correct. So that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And we can open the floor to Mr. Richter. Bruce?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Bruce Richter from DHS CISA. I wanted to share some recent info that came out both from the FBI and from CISA on October 25th. And this is public on our website, but it says the U.S. government is investigating unauthorized access to commercial telecom infrastructure by actors affiliated with the PRC, People's Republic of China. After the FBI identified specific malicious activity targeting the sector, FBI and CISA immediately notified affected companies and shared information with CIS victims. The investigation is ongoing, and we encourage any organization believes it might be a victim to contact local FBI office or CISA. Agencies across the government are collaborating to aggressively mitigate this threat and are coordinating with our industry partners to strengthen their cyber defenses across the commercial comms sector. Well, that's a pretty innocuous threat warning, but the threat is extremely real. Over 10 different telecommunications companies in this country are now known to have been compromised by this, including some of the big ones like AT&T and Verizon and Lumen. So what do you do about it as a consumer of product or a consumer of service? Well, there are some simple things going around that you can do. I'm reading this off an iPad, and just last week, your Apple came out with updates for the iOS for both iPhone and for iPad, and I believe their current one is 18.1. But check to make sure your devices are up. Earlier on in the meeting, Paul mentioned that the upgrades come out from Motorola for dispatch consoles. However, those upgrades fix a lot of known vulnerabilities. They only take effect after you reboot your dispatch console. And I know when you're running a 911 center, the last thing you want to do is take down your dispatch console. But the vulnerabilities continue to exist until you go through that reboot process. So that's another simple thing you can do. We had a great discussion. I really enjoyed this today about perhaps maritime interference with the LMR system, or perhaps some unknown Spanish transmission interfering with the LMR system. How do you really know when it's malicious, harmful, intentional interference versus just stuff that happens in normal life? And indicators of compromise might not be self-evident to you. Well, one of the things that's much better than this press release that came out since October 25th, the Congressional Research Service prepared a short report for Congress. It's open source. I've shared it with John and Paul and Mary and asked that they share it as they see fit. It can go out in a minute, so you can do whatever you want with it. But it gives a little better detail into the implications for what this compromise might be and what people might be able to do about it, or at least just to be aware that it's going on. The threat environment is very real. Just last week, CISA, in conjunction with FBI, in conjunction with DHS Intel, held a meeting here in Anchorage for a bunch of the private sector partners that are providing critical services that support the DoD mission in Alaska. And we're trying to get everybody to be aware this is an ongoing threat, what you can do to raise your cyber readiness and cyber resilience in your agency so you're less likely to be a target. And CISA does have some free services you can sign up for. we've got a cybersecurity advisor in the state, Mark Brunig, and now that the election's over, his time's a little more freed up to help agencies that would like that support. So appreciate the time to share that with the group today, but I think it's just really timely information that people need to be aware of.
Just one comment about CISA's support last week with the telecom agencies and DOD. What we found from the telecom agencies was they sent a lot of IT guys, comm guys, and really at the wrong level, the wrong audience to send for the discussions that needed to be had. The next session is going to be happening at the ports, so might be a good idea. We'll mention when we're there the interference. Now that that was brought up, it's coming in. We'll mention that to the portmaster when we're down there and as we're talking. But we'll be moving through a number of sectors in the state of Alaska in examining from a cyber protection perspective and talking about what civil sector is doing and then how DOD can help, how CISA can help. But it's an area where we all have to share information because we are all in this together. So on the commercial side, and ALMR plays in that. ALMR is one of the vital critical systems that we've identified in our key terrain areas. So we list that, NORTHCOM recognizes that. They recognize the criticality of that from a public safety first response primary communications capability. They also recognize that we are very thin, if at all, have any PACE capability in our public safety communications approach. In other words, we have a primary, but we don't have an alternate, and we don't have a contingency or an emergency approach, which is something we probably need to address and think about what we would do if Alaska Land Mobile Radio from a public safety communications response perspective was taken out, and how do we address a PACE approach for that. So just things to think about. The way the world is right now, the probability that cyber will be the first level attack that we see is very real. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you very much, Bruce. Thank you, Tim, for the comments as well. Any questions for Bruce? Bruce, anything else?
This is Scott. I just want to take advantage of the opportunity, like I always do, to mention once again that, you know, there are many different ways that ALMR can be made more resilient and more robust. The SUA certainly makes the, you know, an ongoing upgrade and staying current process a whole lot easier than periodic capital requests. You know, the current project we had still ongoing, we installed 2021. We are not far away from that being 4 years old. And, you know, starts approaching the time where Motorola will start having difficulties patching it. And we're already, you know, about to start the fiscal year 26 state budget. And if there wasn't any conversation about money in that, you know, we're out to the fiscal year 27 time frame before we'd be looking at having money to upgrade that to whatever the current release is. Mm-hmm. And then there's things like ESR. You know, if you lose one zone controller, things can roll over to another zone controller. So we definitely are, you know, living in the past with what we do with radio. There's a lot that has changed over time that we really haven't taken advantage of because it costs more money. It's not less money to enable some of those technologies and be more robust and more resilient. But We have VLS network, which is huge compared to what we used to have. We used to lose a whole lot of sites when one microwave went down. We don't suffer that in most cases anymore. But that, you know, by evolving to that type of technology, you now have very complicated IC systems that you need skilled people to be able to manage and take care of. And I will say the state is very short of that. The DoD doesn't have any of it. That's why we are helping them with it. But we're really only 1.5 persons away from having nobody to do that if that 1.5 people ever left. So, and there's not a vendor pool out there very easy to get to. And so my usual pitch for this, you know, we're living like we were living 20 years ago. There's a lot that's changed, and we have not adapted to that. We're still using radio like we used it 20 years ago. So there should be more people and more money put into this to keep it robust and try to ensure it is, you know, your primary means of communication as long as it can be.
Yep, copy that, Scott. Thank you very much for the update. You know, we will be talking more about funding some of the future upgrades. So I appreciate the updates. Anything else under new business? If not, any comments or questions? We can just open up the floor for questions or comments. Well, hearing that at this time, the next meetings are currently scheduled for December 4th and January 9th. Before I ask for a motion to adjourn, any last comments, Paul?
Mr. Chair, that's January 8th.
Oh, thank you. December 4th and January 8th, since January 1st is a holiday. I appreciate the correction. Anything else, Paul?
Not from anyone in the room here, Mr. Chair. Thank you for asking.
Thank you very much. And Bruce, as always, thank you very much for your time and energy. We appreciate everything that you do. So at this time, I would entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
This is Henry Cole. I move to adjourn.
Thank you, sir. And may I have a second?
Bob Carter with TSA. I'll second the motion.
Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate it. Everybody's time. Meeting's adjourned.